We own this country. We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. They're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
And we're fired up tonight, folks. We're loaded for bear. It's just been one of those weeks. I'm sick for about the fourth week in a row, so I'm ticked off about that. I watched the stupid State of the Union address last night, so I'm ticked off about that. I've been fighting with my cable company all day for the past couple of days. I'm ticked off about that. And we just got a lot of stuff to be ticked off about. I'm really ticked off about the Republicans, the establishment GOP Republicans laying down during the State of the Union address last night when they should have been calling for impeachment during the middle of the president's speech. This is Lisa Payne Nager. I'm here with Cindy McGee. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Thanks for joining us tonight. It's just going to be a major gripe session, I think, for the next 2 hours. We're here every Wednesday night, and tonight we're going to start it off with, just complaining about things as usual. Cindy and I were chatting it up before the show started, and we were kind of saying how the country is on its last gasp of air. Where do you want to start tonight, Cindy? I mean, my gosh, I'm mad.
Yeah, well, you know, I think one thing that we could do is start with the fact that the President of the United States got up in front of Congress and the American people last night, and he declared open war on the Constitution of the United States.
So how does this happen? In the leader of the free world, the United States of America, okay, gets up before Congress, before television cameras, before millions of people all around the world, okay, some people I guess were smart enough not to watch that nonsense last night, not us. And
well, we had to.
I know. And tells the entire universe that damn the Constitution, damn the rules of engagement. If Congress doesn't give me what I want, I'm just going to use my pen and my phone and to hell with you.
Right.
And he's going after gun rights.
Mm-hmm. He went after gun rights. He's coming back on education. He doubled down on Obamacare last night.
Oh,
and
God.
Let's not forget the debate on climate change is over. There is nothing left to debate. It is a settled issue, and it doesn't matter how many scientists are in disagreement with climate change, how much common sense would tell you there is no real threat from that venue.
Well, I think you're going to have a really hard time explaining it to all those people in Georgia and Florida right now.
Yeah, this man stood up there as a dictator of the new United States last night and inform the American people. I mean, talk about in your face, the debate is over. And you know what? He was not just talking to Congress. He was talking to every single individual, scientist, you name it, whoever, you know, whatever, that has stood up against this and been fighting it and said, you're stupid, sit down, shut up, we're not going to tolerate you anymore.
You know what? And he's right. He's absolutely mm-hmm. right. We're stupid. We're stupid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at this. We're sitting here. There are no pitchforks and torches. There are no muskets. There's nobody. Nobody's
right.
Half the Congress last night was in agreement with him. The other half just stood idly by. Nobody today except, I think Mike Lee did a pretty good thing today. Mike Lee, I've got it here.
He did. The majority of the people in Congress were either sitting there, jumping up on their feet like a bunch of lemmings, applauding this dictator-in-chief and applauding his open, hostile intent to disregard our Constitution
and our
system of government, and to just, you know, and the other half or so of Congress, the majority of them sat there like a bunch of, let me see, I have to find a nice way to put this.
No, you don't.
Schoolboys who have been whipped into submission.
Okay, so two things I want to talk about real quick here. Okay, I want to talk about Mike Lee, and I want to talk about that milquetoast response from Kathy McMorris Rodgers to the State of the Union address. And people were Republicans and talk show hosts were raving about this today. What a bunch of crap! It was just the most boring, scripted talking points from the establishment Republicans that I've ever heard.
You know, Lisa, a point that may come up later is that we don't have a big enough voice yet, and the media, people get all of their sound bites from the media, mainstream media,
et cetera.
Okay,
later.
So, but with that thought, I just threw that out there for this moment to say that when the Republicans had the president's speech way ahead of last night, they get copies of it. The Republicans,
and that's the best they could do.
The Republican response, they should have come on out with the gloves off, and they should have been loaded for bear to rip this president up one side and down the other. His numbers are so far down, it's ridiculous. And he stood there and he bald-faced lied, and they knew he was going to about Obamacare and a lot of other things, and they weren't prepared to address. They didn't come out of the chute fighting and swinging. What is up with that?
Yeah, I'm with you on that one.
What is up with that?
I mean, we've got...
That
there,
is just
never in history,
ridiculous.
Yeah, never in history has there been so much ammunition to go after somebody. They've got Fast
exactly.
and Furious. They've got Benghazi. They've got countless executive orders that have done nothing but dismantle the Constitution. I mean, they've got Obamacare. They've got everything. They could... I mean, it's a Republican's dream, and they're not doing anything with it. They're just sitting there and twiddling their thumbs.
Right. And he stood there and he told the legislative branch of our government, one of the three branches that our founders set up, that they are insignificant and of no use. And if they don't toe the line and support his agenda, he will simply go around them and use executive fiat to get done what he wants done.
I know. They should have been carrying him out in handcuffs at that point.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There should have been a cry from both sides of the aisle to begin impeachment proceedings immediately against a president who openly declared. I mean, this has been going on. Okay, we get it. This president has been acting on his own from the get-go, and his intention to go around Congress if necessary we've always known that's what he would do. But the bottom line is he stood there and he openly admitted. It was like listening to the confession of a serial killer last night, telling us exactly, not only did he tell us what, not only did he just stand there unashamedly talking about what he had already, admitting what he had already done, but he's telling us in advance what gets slaughtered next.
Exactly.
We're going to just sit there and take that?
Yeah, well, evidently we are, because we are. You know, nobody's talking about impeachment, and it would look to, by all intents and purposes, well, maybe not. We'll talk about, the Senate race later on. But, I mean, really, it is quite possible. Obama's numbers are so bad that in the 2014 midterms, he could lose the Senate. I mean, there's a possibility. He could lose the Senate. And nobody, not even Mike Lee and Ted Cruz and Rand Paul, nobody's talking impeachment. Nobody's uttering the word like it's a banned word, like you can't talk about it.
Right.
And we've never had more ammunition to impeach a president. And I'm telling you, if we gain control of the Senate and somebody doesn't immediately start impeachment proceedings against this guy to get him thrown out of office, it's time to move to Belize. Time to go.
Yeah. I think I'm with you. It was really horrible to have to sit through that last night. And you're right. you know, he's going to come after our guns. He can't even get members of his own party on board with that.
Well, that's what scares me. Yeah, that's what really frightens me.
So he's just going to go around. He's going to give them, you know, cover by not demanding that they support him on gun control, and he'll go around that to come after our guns. And, you know, it's outrageous. I mean, he already signed an illegal under our Constitution. It has to be ratified. It has to be ratified by the Congress. You know, he already entered into an illegal contract with the UN concerning gun control.
Right.
With that treaty that he signed. This man has basically, through executive fiat, again, giving a foreign entity power to circumvent the United States Constitution and what we, the citizens of this nation, are guaranteed under that Constitution in the Bill of Rights.
Let's talk about Mike Lee today. There's a story in the Blaze.
Okay.
Going after Obama's executive orders. Just briefly, Attorney General Eric Holder was unable to explain to Congress why President Barack Obama was within his constitutional limits when he issued an executive order to delay Obamacare's employer mandate. The nation's top law enforcement officer said he hasn't looked at the analysis in some time and thus was unsure of where along the constitutional spectrum the order was permitted. Okay, so Mike Lee just tore him up one side and down the other. Thank God for Mike Lee. Thank God for people like Mike Lee and Ted Cruz and so on.
Yeah. Yeah, we have a few good men standing.
But they're floating out there alone. And I think one of the most important issues, because the argument is that Obama and his executive orders, he hasn't issued as many executive orders as, say, Bush or some of the other past presidents, but Lee made this perfect point, and I've been thinking this for a long time. I don't know why it took somebody so long to get it out in the media. Lee said, looking at the nature of Obama's use of executive orders, it is clear the president has usurped an extraordinary amount of authority within the executive branch. Now, he may not have written as many, but the types of executive orders that he's issuing are 10 times more dangerous than orders that have been issued by past presidents. And what I am scared to death, we are a hair's breadth away of losing our Second Amendment rights with this president and the fragile Congress that we have right now with a bunch of lily-livered, spineless, dirtbag.
Right.
Oh, just can't even, words can't explain.
And the best the Republicans, the GOP, can do in all of this, apparently, the establishment GOP, the best they can offer is criticism of the Tea Party, marginalizing the Tea Party.
Yeah.
Gave them back the Congress in 2011.
Yeah. We're going to get into that in greater depth today.
When you really think about it, it's mind-boggling to me that there is not a greater hue and cry, and that the best that the GOP could do was to offer the mamby-pamby response that they did to the president's State of the Union address. They should have come out with the guns blazing last night.
And they could have.
And they had the opportunity, Lisa.
I listened to the establishment Republican response, and then I listened to Mike Lee's response. And, you know, those few people that are kind of twisting in the wind out there, those few really conservative Tea Party representatives are out there talking truth. You know, they're talking substance. And it's night and day from what you're hearing from the establishment Republican Party. And later on, we're going to have Dr. Randy Tobler of 97.1 here in St. Louis on with us. I wrote an article about a week ago, that posted on Politichik.tv and Examiner.com. My congressman, Blaine Lutgemeier, from the 3rd District here in Missouri, has joined the bandwagon on attacking the Tea Party. You know, evidently, and there seems to be certain talking points that you're kind of hearing now from all of the establishment Republicans that are coming out and talking trash on the Tea Party conservatives. They all mirror each other, and it's biting, as far as I'm concerned, it's biting the hand that feeds you. We're blocking their agenda. I'd like to know what the hell their agenda is, because it's certainly not protecting the Constitution from anything I've seen. But according to Blaine Lukemeyer, you know, the Tea Party is hell reincarnated. It's just bad news. And we're going to talk to Randy Tobler about that in a little while. Coming up next, though, we have Robin Eubanks. We're going to talk Common Core. Cindy and I are both ex-homeschool moms, former homeschool moms. We have been following the Common Core issue here in Missouri for years. Before it was cool to follow Common Core, we've been kind of on top of this issue. Now in the last year or so, it's finally hit the mainstream, and there have been a lot of people across the country working really hard to uncover all the nasty truths about Common Core. Robin Eubanks is one of those people, and she has a book out, How and Why Education Became a Weapon, or a Credential to Destroy, How and Why Education Became a Weapon. And she's going to be on with us in just a minute to talk more about that. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
It really is time for the people of America to take up pitchforks. It really is time for the people of America to take up pitchforks.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for GrassFire alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
Hello. It's Dave, and I'm here to tell you that on Saturday nights at 7 o'clock, we talk about the fair tax on The Fair Tax Show. That Saturday night at 7 o'clock on Missouri Grassroots Radio, we explode the myths, we tell the truth, we get to the bottom of this tax code that ought to be the one to replace the IRS. Get involved in the discussion. Learn everything there is to learn. 347-677-1835, Saturday, 7 o'clock p.m., Missouri Grassroots Radio.
You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried, it seems there's certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes, walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
I've got a feeling that the tide is turning.
Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and I'm here with Cindy McGee of Show Me Patriots. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. And as I said before the break, we have been following the Common Core issue here for quite a while. There is probably, I mean, we complain about a lot of stuff here on Culture Vigilante, and there's a lot of stuff to complain about, Lord knows. But, you know, as a mom, and I think, you know, the Tea Party movement has proven probably to be one of the best sounding boards for moms. You know, we are so involved in the culture and the structure of what makes this great, this nation great, and it's really families, and it's our kids. It's about the future, and education is at the very heart of that. And if you can grab the nation's children, and you have the ability to guide their education, you can take it in any direction you want. And right now, it's not going in a very good direction, and the reason for that, the hottest problem in education now is not the teachers' unions anymore, it's Common Core. And we have on the line with us Robin Eubanks. She's actually going to be in the St. Louis area over the next few days, so that's why we have her here. We're going to advertise those places where she's going to be, and maybe you can come out and hear her speak on this very important issue. She's an author. She's just published a book. She is an attorney. She has a background in healthcare law, and most importantly, she's a mom. And she cares very deeply. She's been researching this Common Core issue for a very long time, and she's here with us to kind of help educate you all on the finer points of Common Core. Thanks for being with us tonight, Robin.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we have plenty of time. There's a lot to get into. Where do you want to start? I mean, this thing is a huge mess. We're pretty well versed in Common Core here. We follow Missouri Education Watchdog very closely. Gretchen Logue and Ann Gassel have been leading activists here in the Missouri area, but across the nation for Common Core. Some of their work has helped to get this situation out in the open. We know a little bit about what's going on here, but it just seems to be an issue that is multiplying every day. We hear more and more about what's going on in our schools, what our kids are being exposed to, how the general public and the parents are left out of the mix, and how you're just pretty powerless to fight it.
Yeah, it's probably my legal background, but one of the things I focus on is less of Common Core, the idea. I think it's bad that you basically have the federal government and at some level international authorities dictating what goes on in the local classroom. But what I focus on is the actual implementation. Who has the authority to dictate what goes on in the classroom and what are they saying? What are they dictating in the name of the Common Core? Because what I'm finding is that Common Core has become kind of like a bucket. All the radical changes that have been floating around, it's part of what I outline in the book. I take people through the 60s attempt to radically change culture in the U.S. using education, the 90s, which are best remembered as outcomes-based education, and then the third attempt is what we're calling Common Core. And what was controversial in the past has basically been broken up and given better names, but they're the same controversial aspects, and a lot of what came in, like school to work at the federal level in the 90s, is now coming in at the state level, and much less likely to be on anybody's radar. So if it's not on your radar, you can't complain until your child tells you, you know, there's something going on in school, and I don't know why they're asking me this. And that's, you know, your first alert that things have changed dramatically in your child's classroom.
Yeah, and by that time it's too late because it's already there. It's already been implemented.
It's already there. And, you know, I was listening to your previous segment before this started, and you were talking about executive orders. One of the things that is a very far-reaching executive order that binds all classrooms, every state, whether you're participating in Common Core or not, is an executive order from July of 2012 involving positive school climate. Basically, positive school climate pulls in almost every social and emotional learning curriculum. A lot of it is New Age spirituality, so you'll get the same individuals. They're calling it positive behavior, and it comes in under that positive school climate. And then the next day, they go to some conference and discuss it as New Age spirituality. It's the same, what they call a mindfulness curriculum. So there are all sorts of things out there that are being done in the name of the Common Core, and they're being pushed by people who have the authority to bind what goes on in the classroom. And that's kind of scary because a lot of legislators think that they have authority they actually don't have in the classroom. The accreditation agencies have a tremendous amount of authority.
Let's talk about those people. Let's identify who those people are with the authority.
Okay. To me, the biggest are the accreditation agencies. Most people think that they remember the days when they were looking for how many books do you have in the library, what's the ratio in the classroom. And one of the things I detail in the book is I was able to locate a copy of exactly what the quality standards are, and that's what they call them, quality standards. And quality does not have an academic meaning. It has a how to change the child's personality and dispositions and what they believe and what they value. That's what quality learning means. Excellence in education, that term excellence has a very similar meaning. It means to try to get a child where what they wish for, what they think, and what they feel is all kind of a simultaneous emotion causing them to act. Now, who would think excellence in education meant that?
And how? What does that have to do with diagramming sentences?
Oh, you don't get to diagram sentences. Diagramming sentences builds logic, and one of the things that as you go through the documents and the reports and people who have a great deal of power and are connected to people who are involved in Common Core now is you discover a term I call it, the metaphor I use is called an axe maker's mind. They don't want axe maker's minds. Axe maker's minds can defy the herd. Axe maker's minds can go, yeah, that's a bad analogy. That's or that doesn't make sense. Or the explanation you just gave me, yeah, I know facts, and that's not true. And that's exactly what power, political power, doesn't want people who can say no, and especially if they can say no and explain why they're saying no. So there's a tremendous amount of the implementation surrounding the Common Core that goes to controlling what people believe and trying to get them to filter what they know through general concepts like social justice, racism, inequality, climate change. Those are the broad concepts that are provided, and instead of getting a body of facts, you get the broad concept and then an illustrating fact. And then everything gets cycled back through those basic common themes that the Common Core calls enduring understandings, and they also call them understandings of consequence. So those are and the term they use is lens. We want students to see the world through these lenses.
Wow. So I'm listening to you talk about all of these aspects of Common Core. You know, I homeschooled both of my children all the way through with a classical education model. You know, a lot of homeschoolers use a classical education model.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my children excelled on standardized tests. We know that Common Core relies very heavily on assessments and tests.
They don't rely on tests. They use the word assessment to make you think that that's a test, but they're considering assessments to be group projects. They are considering assessments to be virtual reality immersion games. They are considering assessment. It is a very broad term intended to kind of mislead, but to me the really troubling part of the assessments that they're designing are they keep talking in terms of there being no fixed answer.
Yeah,
it being an ambiguous situation. And it goes back to, remember I mentioned the enduring understandings, the lenses. They want to see if there is no fixed answer, if it's an ambiguous situation, what concepts do you reach for to try to interpret in that situation? And that's a big part of what's being assessed.
So can I ask a question here, Robin? This is Cindy. I'm sitting in with Lisa
tonight. Hi, Cindy. Yes.
Hi.
Ask away.
I love what you're saying. It's what in talking about the assessments, and Lisa talked about her children, their testing, and mine did also. They excelled, and they did really well on the standardized tests and stuff. But under Common Core and the direction that they're taking this and with what they're doing with assessments, pretending that they're tests, and they're really not. This is just a way to force these kids to stay in this mold and to give the answers that they want. There is not going to, the standardized tests that Lisa and I use to help our children find, you know, to help find out are our children progressing, they're no longer going to be relevant.
They're no longer going to be relevant.
at all, and
right.
that they want standardized testing to go away, because mm-hmm. standardized testing has always been the obstacle that stood in the way of changing the nature of education, because basically it's a monitor. It says, you know, they're not reading very well anymore. They don't know math. And they don't want something triggering this recognition that it's not that they don't want X maker minds. And there are studies out there that they've decided that as long as most students have at least a B average, parents don't pay attention. So you get the whole system kind of rigged. So you redefine what student achievement means. You redefine what success means in the school. And then you declare that, oh, they've met it. Well, the fact that they met it because your child doesn't know anything, but they have developed the desired dispositions that are wanted,
so,
you're not going to know that. But go ahead.
I totally know. I mean, this is brainwashing. You know, it's mind control on the basic level, and I can see how they're going to get into that in the lower grades. But how are these kids going to get into college and become engineers and scientists and doctors and lawyers? And
well, part of the race to the top, you remember
Obama brought that back up. Did you? If you listened to the State of the Union last night, it resurfaced in his speech.
Right. Race to the top was originally set up as part of the Stimulus Act. They learned from the 90s attempt. This time, they were going to fund the alternative assessments, and that's what they used to call them, alternative assessments, because they get the graduation rates up because you're not measuring knowledge anymore. So they funded the alternative assessments in advance, and the race to the top requires all this stuff. And in order to get the money, you have to agree to push math, to push constructivist math, push constructivist science, teach reading a certain way. But most importantly, if you were a state that wanted to go after race to the top funds, you needed to get your state university system to agree that if you had adopted the Common Core standards, that they would deem those students to be college ready and no longer in need of remediation. Now, if something is in fact higher standards, do you need to in advance lock somebody up and say, okay, you're not going to dispute that this is a higher, that they know this stuff. You're not going to dispute they need remediation, because they recognize that one of the things that gets in the way of various groups getting the college diploma is they come in, they don't have the necessary knowledge and skills, frequently because their K through 12 was deliberately gutted, and they show up in college, they're paying money, but they're not taking credit-bearing courses, and they run out of money, and they never get that degree. So now you're going to show up, even if you don't know much, you're going to be able to start getting credit-bearing courses from the get-go and be on your way to getting that degree. And what I'm hearing from professors around the country is that their pressure to make things like tweeting something count for English credit.
Oh,
not writing an essay,
me.
Not writing a research paper, but tweeting.
Oh, my God. I'm floored. What's constructive?
I've been after this for a while, so I really do track this at a very deep level, the legislation, the regulation, the reports, and I go through, and part of what got me into it was I read the Race to the Top, and I said, basically, everything that's ever been controversial is being expanded, and everything that's ever worked well is being shut down. Why? And it was that investigation that led to the book, and then after I finished the book, I saw some other disturbing things going on and basically pushed the book to the side, started a blog to kind of react in real time with what was going on, and then finally got the book out in time to catch up with the Common Core going live this past fall. So I've been doing both.
Yeah, it's enough to keep. It's a full-time job. I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine sifting through all of this nonsense. Just you said something a minute ago. Explain to me exactly so that we can kind of give people a picture. I mean, it's obviously all brainwashing. It's all fuzzy. It's all, you know, multiple answers are acceptable. Explain to me constructivist math. Now, I've heard lots of things about, you know, the fuzzy math that's been implemented within the Common Core structure. But, I mean, math, two plus two will always equal four, but that's not the issue with Common Core.
Constructivist math is designed to treat math as a activity of the individual, not as a body of knowledge. And this is true with constructivist math or constructivist science. They do not want it to be a body of knowledge that you learn, and they don't want it to be. They don't like the fact that math and science are logical. They're sequential. They don't care if you understand it or not. As you said, you know, 2 + 2 = 4. But they want people who might consider that it could be 5 under certain scenarios. They want you to be open. They want you to believe everything is in context. Everything is relative. And so constructivist math ends up leaving you where they push a lot of concepts where you won't know the answer. It won't be something that's been taught. And they teach the idea that productive struggle is beneficial. Well, productive struggle is frustrating.
Yeah.
But the idea is that if you teach a body of knowledge at school, then the students will not appreciate the need for transformational change. They will come to believe that it's okay for society and the economy to continue to exist basically as presently structured. And this goes back to John Dewey. And so if you have to struggle in school, if you have that sense of frustration and you have the emotions involved in schoolwork, that is highly conducive to the kind of transformational mindsets that I call them political schemers, because using the term they always causes people to go, who is they? And I always explain who they is. But it gets to the point to just substitute the term political schemers, people who view education as the institution that virtually everyone in a society passes through for an extended period of time during their most impressionable years.
Mm-hmm.
And every radical knows that, and they intend to use it. They've wanted to use it for a long time. And honestly, the Common Core is, in their minds, kind of the final assault. Everything that's ever been controversial in the past, they think they've closed the doors off. They think they've handled it. They think there's no way out. And that's kind of what's coming at us, all under the banner of the Common Core.
Okay, so where does this leave us? Because, you know, they're going to do a great job of conditioning an army. They've already got a conditioned army. Most of the people in the United States are sheeple. They are following blindly. They're not questioning. Here we are, you know, the Constitution is burning at our feet, and nobody seems to think that it's a problem. You know, they're pretty close to getting what they want. But you have to have some educated people. You have to have people who know how to program the computers, and you have to have doctors and scientists and people to build the cars and engineers. You've got to have somebody who knows this. What are they doing? How is that going to work? Where are we going to end up?
They think we have enough technology. They do. They kind of like it that it will be highly unlikely that the kind of minds that can come up with unapproved, earth-shaking. I mean, that's why they like the axe-maker mind metaphor. They don't want that kind of mind that can come up with an earth-changing, world-shifting technology like what the axe did thousands of years ago. It completely changed the ability and the relationship between man and nature, because all of a sudden they could change nature. And it's not an accident that they started talking about wanting to get rid of axe makers' minds, and I seized upon it and said, basically, this is a great way to illustrate to parents and taxpayers what was really at issue with the reading wars and the math wars and the science wars, what's ultimately going on with Common Core, why all of a sudden they're talking about using video games in the classroom and how it's okay because it's engaging to the kids. And you're not becoming a more productive person from what goes on in education. This idea that it's good enough just to have the degree is nonsense. But so many of the people who push all this stuff have spent their adult lives getting grants from non-taxed foundations, from living off of property taxes and the taxpayer. And honestly, they don't seem to have a very good handle on what makes the world work. And there's only there's not a finite pot of money as they seem to assume in a lot of these writings. If you engage in mind arson to get political power, which is a big part of what's going on, that mind arson destroys the pot of money they intend to redistribute. So part of what I'm trying to do is not just describe what's going on, but to try to describe the consequences, what's happened in the past, and other people's money does run out. Margaret Thatcher was right.
Yes.
And as people wonder, why aren't there jobs? Why can't I find a job? Well, if you make education about changing people's perspectives instead of knowledge and marketable skills, something somebody wants to pay you for, there's a reason nobody's getting the kind of jobs they thought should come with those degrees. And so I'm just trying to get people to appreciate what's really going on, and citing real documents and authoritative figures and people with power who said, this is what I intend to do, and saying, this won't work, and this is why I know it won't work. It's been tried before.
Just shocking. Okay, so with the redistribution of wealth and creating the, you know, the followers mentality, what you're really going to end up with is a society of haves and have-nots. We're all going to be serfs. How are the haves going to be served by the have-nots who don't have an education? I mean, somebody's got to know how to serve. You know, I mean, eventually they're going to, it's almost like every parasite kills its host. You know, they're going to run out of.
That's a really good analogy. Again, I think about that one a lot. Yes, they don't get that they're parasitic, and they don't get that they're killing the host. And I'm really glad you came up with that, because I mull that over all the time. That's exactly what's going on. That's why the phrase mind arson is so apt. The true wealth of a society isn't what's in the ground. It's the fact that somebody with an excellent mind, an axe maker's mind, said, you know what? What's in the ground can be used for this purpose. That's what made it valuable. And that's what's being extinguished, and it's being extinguished in order to make people malleable and unlikely to recognize what's going on. If you go back in history, and I was a history major, the historical norm is that economic power and political power are aligned in the same group, a king, a council, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of a shift back to that norm, but what people forget is what created the prosperity we all take for granted, and even in a recession, it's a level of prosperity like the world has never seen, is that those unique individuals, that unique knowledge, that freedom to come up with those great ideas. And that's what's being extinguished, and it matters, and it's going to matter. And I would argue that outcomes-based education in the 90s didn't get its end goal, but it sure has complicated and diminished a lot of students' lives who are in their 20s and they never learned to read properly, and they aren't good writers, and they went to college, and they got a degree, and they don't appreciate, they don't know much.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't know what's happened to them. And they have an expectation of what their life ought to be like, and it's not being met. And there are people who are just wanting to mine that.
It seems to me, somebody's not seeing the forest for the trees here, because.
No.
Go ahead.
Let me throw this out there. I think that one of the things that we're seeing is a classic. We're experiencing a classic historic event that repeats itself when people refuse to look at history and what history could teach them about the road they're taking, and thinking that they can be the haves and they can control the have-nots and that everything's going to turn out all right. The Stalins, the Lenins, the Maos, pick your dictator from history. All of them think that they can get that formula for socialism, communism, suppressing for their own gain, and they can make that work and they can benefit from it, and they ignore the plethora of example from history that says this will not work, it cannot work, and what eventually will happen is the have-nots will turn on the haves.
If they're aware in time. You know,
well, true.
One of the
eventually
things
they do.
Yeah, one of the things I was so shocked about in the research is I always assumed that, you know, things didn't work out in the Soviet Union. It was a bad model. And I kept stumbling across the idea that the reason it didn't work is they started from an agricultural economy, and that they skipped a stage, and that skipping this stage was important. And what I discovered is that there are all these professors and people who and foundations, and they believe that the U.S. is really the place where the revolution should have been tried, because we had gone through that requisite stage that meant you weren't just going to redistribute poverty. We had the necessary level of technology, which they attribute to computers, by the way, that would allow redistribution to work. And I read these theories, and you just sort of go, okay, this isn't going to work. But they fully intend to try it. I mean, there's a book that came out, I forget the publishing, was one of the major publishing companies within the last 2 weeks, talking about what would socialism be like in the USA. And in the middle of it is a chapter from William Ayers, Bill Ayers, describing what he calls freedom education. And it's very much tied up with this vision. But his freedom education vision, the language in it, follows what the actual Common Core implementation looks like. This is a matter of putting the pieces together. But once you put the pieces together, there's not a lot of variance in what's being sought. And the people who are seeking it, by and large, if they push it, they get power, they get money, they get promotions, they get to live at taxpayer expense. They don't have a sense of the downside of what they're pushing. And those of us who follow it and look at it and get in the nitty-gritty are going, hey, this won't work. But it's a matter of getting the attention of enough people going, I know that, you know, your legislator says this is fine, or your school board says this is fine, but they're not getting accurate information. And these are what the documents say, and there's really not a dispute about what the documents say if you get down to that level. And just trying to bring that to enough people's attention to go, this won't work, this is not why we pay property taxes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our Constitution matters. This is an exceptional country. It's not a matter of being jingoistic. It's we've created something magnificent in this country, and we are very foolish to throw it away, which is what's happening.
Okay, so now we have the broader picture. We have the philosophical view of Common Core. Can you, in all of your research, can you give us some specific examples of what Common Core looks like so that parents out there who may be listening can recognize what's going on in their classrooms as Common Core implementation so that they can identify with what's going on and recognize this?
I mentioned the gaming already. There's a large focus on the visual media that you'll see in projects where they want to give far less points for just print, you know, like a research paper, as mm-hmm. opposed to somebody who does a movie. That's much more points than any research paper is going to be anymore. There's a lot of emphasis on role-playing so that the person, the student, imagines themselves in a situation that they don't really understand. One of the ones that came to my attention about a month ago was there's a book written by somebody about what it was like to live in the Cabrini Green high-rise in Chicago, and they want you to imagine what it would have been like to live in Cabrini Green and to come up with a game plan of the actions you would take to change the nature of what life is like for each of the individuals that live in Cabrini Green. And so you're kind of emotionalizing issues that you don't understand very well. You get this idea. They don't want lectures. I know incredibly talented teachers who've been told that they will lose their jobs if they continue to try to teach history in terms of facts, or science. Or if they're a math teacher and they still want to teach a superintendent, I overheard listening, he was explaining to other people, you know, if they want to teach a sequential approach to solving a math problem, they need to be out of there.
Wow.
That's the Common Core. It is very against the transmission of knowledge, because the transmission of knowledge creates nostalgia for society as it currently exists.
Well, let me ask you this. My kids are both in college now, and even when they were in high school, they were in dual enrollment college credit classes, and you know, as part of their homeschool curriculum. And something that I noticed early on in that environment, because you know we had homeschooled all those years, and my kids were being put into this classroom environment, and they still are being subjected to a lot of group projects in the sciences, and you know, in studies where you would think, you know, how do you do a group project, you know, in a biology lab? You know, it is what it is. And is that part of the kind of thing that we're seeing here? We're all being asked to collaborate and work together.
Exactly, and collaboration is one of the four C's of 21st century learning. It is collaboration, critical thinking, creativity, and communication. Those are the skills that you need for the 21st century, and they are that generic. And basic skills. That's why all students can succeed, because you keep it at a basic level, and you level those really high-achieving students so that you will hear people talk about it that, oh, it's just a floor, it's not the ceiling. But everybody has to be at the floor. If you get the floor, you can move along and scoot along the floor, but you don't get to move to higher level or more content. You just get to move on to the next level of what they call competency. Nobody's supposed to know much, and a great deal of what you're supposed to know is actually not accurate. So,
just amazing. It's just amazing to me. But there is really no critical thinking in the Common Core. I mean, that's kind of a misnomer.
It has a special definition. It's not analytical thinking.
Okay, so explain the difference so that people, because when you go to your parent-teacher conference or you're going to whatever event at the school, the assembly, the parent assembly, or whatever things that they have, and they're giving you the buzzwords that they want you to know. I mean, it all sounds pretty good. You know, if you don't really know anything about what's going on, and a lot of parents in public education are pretty disengaged. They put their kid on the bus and they don't really care about what goes on, you know, and they're just kind of getting the propaganda. We want to kind of give them those buzzwords and let them understand what that propaganda is.
Yeah, critical thinking means to gain an appreciation for the injustices of society as it currently exists and to want to take action to transform it. That's what critical thinking means. Rigor is another one of those misleading terms. Rigor means that there is no fixed answer and you struggle with it, and it goes back to what I was talking about, the enduring understandings. In a rigorous situation, there is no fixed answer, and they're looking to see what concepts you apply in that situation. Everything is designed so that the parent hearing it goes, uses their Webster's Dictionary meaning and goes, oh, that sounds good,
mm-hmm.
and doesn't appreciate that what's going on in the classroom is actually far different from what they would have guessed. And, you know, until the child shows up and starts just telling you, this isn't fair, this shouldn't have happened, why is this the case? And then you go, what's going on in your English class? And they say, oh, we've been talking about minimum wage in English class. And you kind of wonder why that's going on in English class. Actually, I've quit wondering. But but that's the dynamic. I wouldn't get anywhere if I showed up in the classroom and said, you know, to the teacher, guess what? I'm an expert on the Common Core, and I know what you're up to. And my kids told me a long time ago that the worst thing in the world is some adult that's mad at me. And so the best thing I can do is appreciate what's being targeted with respect to my own kids. And that's a big part of me wanting to try to tell this story. We need to try to change this long term, but short term, the more parents who appreciate what's being targeted, they can supplement, they can still teach their child to read correctly and not just have the language that the school wants them to know as being pretty much the extent of their vocabulary. You can step in, you can supplement, you can take trips, you can talk to them. If you know what's under attack, you can take precautions, and you won't be 3 years later going, what happened? How is it that my child never learned to read properly? And you can just be attentive, and maybe you can't take it to the teacher, but you can sure supplement quite a bit at home, and that makes all the difference.
It absolutely does. But let me ask you this, in all of your research and your interactions with education professionals and classroom teachers, how are they adapting to this Common Core? How do they feel about it? I hear some teachers are really pushing back. They don't like it. They hate it. It's, you know, it destroys what a talented teacher is goes into teaching for.
It does. It depends on how strongly the teacher feels about teaching factual knowledge. If that's why they went into teaching, they're miserable. If they went into teaching because they want to be a social change agent, they think it's wonderful. If in their education classes, when they were told that what you feel is more important than you know and they believe that, they think it's wonderful. When you hear a principal make that statement, you just want to look at them and go, really? They put you in charge? But they do say that. And so it depends on how much of a veteran you're dealing with. There's very much of a push to try to get the veteran teachers to retire. A lot of the administrators now spend very little time teaching in the classroom. You know, within 2 years, they started on that assistant principal, area administrator track, and they know that the promotions come not from what you know, but from what you're willing to do, what you're willing to push. And
right.
If it's controversial, you're going to get the big money promotions if you push it anyway. And
right.
So we're dealing with a very dangerous dynamic going on because it's our tax money, it's our kids' lives, and adults have been led to believe if they push this stuff, you know, a lot of public retirements are based on your last 3 years of income determines your pension for life. And so the harder they push these bad ideas, the faster the promotions come, quicker they get into six figures, the more they think they're going to make for the rest of their life at our expense for what they were willing to do to our kids and lied to us about. It's a terrible dynamic.
It's pretty bad. And what a lot of them don't realize is the way that with the implementation as it goes on further down the road, a lot of these teachers are going to be out of work. There's going to be a lot of virtual teaching that goes along with Common Core, and a lot of these folks are not going to be working.
And that is being played up a lot so that the teachers appreciate toe the line or find another profession. And so the parent thinks that, oh, it's so hard to get a job. Oh, they're getting rid, you know, there's a case in California going on now trying to get rid of their tenure law, and I read the brief that came out about 1 or 2 days ago. And at the end of the day, it sounds good, but you look at it and go, okay, so the it's not a matter of the teacher who doesn't know the subject now going to lose their job. It's a matter of the teacher who's not willing to push these bad ideas in the classrooms and the false beliefs. They're the ones that are going to lose their job. And I'm not saying tenure doesn't need to be reformed. It does. But the push to get tenure reform, changing the dynamics of what you're looking for in a teacher, is not coming right now because they want knowledgeable teachers in the classroom. It's coming because if you're not willing to push this, they want you out of there. Because in the past, in the 60s attempt and the 90s attempt, what got in the way of the implementation was the teacher shutting that classroom door and going back to teaching the content and going back to teaching what they thought kids needed to know. And everything is designed to get at teachers who want to do that. And the federal government is the ones who have said you've got to tie your teacher evaluations to growth, student growth, without people. When we talked about new definitions of success, new definitions of student achievements, well, student growth is not knowledge. Student growth is that change in values, that change in beliefs, the desired dispositions. All of those are student growth for purposes of teacher evaluation. That makes you an effective teacher. You may not know anything accurate, but if you can change those kids' values, you are an effective teacher.
Oh my gosh. Robin Eubanks, incredible information. If you are in the St. Louis area over the next couple of days, you'll have an opportunity to sit in on a couple of places that Robin will be speaking. The Springfield Tea Party is hosting you at 6 p.m. tomorrow at the Route 66 Hotel and Conference Center at 6th Street and Stevenson in Springfield, Illinois. And Friday, you'll be in St. Charles, Missouri, right here in my neck of the woods. The St. Charles County Pachyderm is hosting you at 12 noon at the Golden Corral on Zumble Road. If you don't get a chance to hear Robin in person, go to the InvisibleSurfCollar.com, read her blog, and pick up her book, How and Why Education Became a Weapon, on Amazon and Kindle, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Robin, thank you so much. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again soon.
Thank you for having me on, and good luck to everybody with their kids and what's going on in our schools.
And thank you. Thank you for your work. We'll talk
okay.
to you again.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We're going to take a break, and we will be back with Randy Tobler. We're going to talk about why the GOP is attacking the Tea Party. We'll be right back. Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
The affirmative task we have now is to actually create a new world order, because the global order is changing again. And the institutions, the rules that worked so well in the post-World War II era for decades, they need to be strengthened.
and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
You know, what I'm talking about and what John was referring to were three groups in particular: Heritage Action, Freedom Works, and Club for Growth. In particular, Heritage Action. Those three groups are the ones who continually undermine what's going on, what we try and accomplish there in Washington. Particularly Heritage Action is just over the top with the way they try and what they behave, that they have a different agenda, that they're not conservatives, that they're out here using our conservative movement, they're using our Tea Party folks, they're using other conservative groups, and pitting one against another and dividing our conference, dividing our party, dividing conservatives by what they're doing. And when I tell people, I said, they're actually a liberal organization in conservative clothes, they kind of look at me, yeah, right, sure, and say they chart and score all sorts of crazy amendments and crazy bills out here that make no sense. And in fact, what they're doing is giving cover to a lot of Democrats, liberal Democrats, who when they vote like Pelosi here, who vote with them on some of these crazy bills and amendments that they score for no reason whatsoever, or at least no conservative good reason anyway, and they go back home then and campaign as moderate or conservative Democrats. They are undermining everything that we stand for and everything we work for from the standpoint of our party and as conservatives. They are not who you think they are. And I've seen these groups morph from what I thought they were pretty good organizations who actually worked in concert with us in the House to try and pass good conservative legislation on principles and values. And to these organizations now that are only worried about their membership numbers and their bank account. But these groups, and I'm talking about the Freedom Works, Club for Growth, and the Heritage Action, are not who you think they are, and that they are using and misinforming a lot of our good conservative folks, our Tea Party folks, the folks who make up the principled, valued part of our party, and are skewing some of their points of view for their own benefit. They undermine our party, they undermine our agenda, and they are undermining the conservative movement of this country. You know, especially I'm talking about the three now that really are the problem children that we deal with, and especially Heritage Action. You know, they undermine our ability to come to a consensus and get something done.
So do you get the feeling that Blaine Lukemeyer doesn't like Heritage Action and Tea Party groups like Freedom Works and Club for Growth? This is Lisa Payne Nager. I'm here with Cindy McGee. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. A couple of weeks ago, well, right before Christmas, actually, Dr. Randy Tobler of 97.1 KFTK here in St. Louis hosts a Saturday morning conservative talk radio show every Saturday morning from 6 to 10 a.m. And regularly he has Congressman Lukemeyer on for updates and interviews on relevant topics. And right before Christmas, you heard an explosion of Tea Party attacks. And it wasn't just coming from Congressman Lukemeyer. You heard this from Boehner. You heard this from others. And the talking points are pretty much about the same. If you compare what's going on from the GOP, the establishment GOP, you're kind of hearing this very disconcerting diatribe coming out of the right-wing GOP establishment party against the Tea Party movement. And that was a montage of one of Dr. Tobler's shows with Blaine Lukemeyer. I put that together. I want to be fair. He did say other things within the scope of the interview about why he felt that the Tea Party was not helping along the establishment a goal, but basically that was pretty much it. He pretty much just doesn't like the Tea Party. And I wrote an article in Examiner.com and Politichicks.tv outlining some of those issues. And Dr. Tobler is here with us tonight to kind of discuss this explosion of Tea Party attacks over the last, I think we've lost Dr. Tobler. We had him on the line. I think we lost him. Well, maybe he'll call back in just a minute. He's here. He's going to be here with us tonight. I hope he'll call back in. There he is. To talk to us about this experience that we've had with Congressman Lueckemeyer and with maybe other GOP Republicans across the country. Thanks for being with us, Dr. Tobler.
Hey, my pleasure. If I lose you, I'm on a cell here out in Liberty Land, so it's going to be tough. Once in a while, Verizon lets me down. But then again, it may be the NSA. I'm not sure.
That could be.
How are you? Hey, yeah. I have to tell you, I enjoyed your talk there with your guest just who moved on there about the Common Core. I think she made a lot of good points. And I also want to compliment you on your wonderful pieces that you wrote on this. First of all, this controversy, this difficulty in calibrating, establishment versus Tea Party, if we want to couch it as a war, and I think you've done a good job of fairly portraying the battle line. So it's good job. Job well done.
Oh, thank you very much. As you and I have had a conversation before, you know I'm mm-hmm. pretty staunchly rooted in the grassroots movement. I have a pretty heavy bias. Mm-hmm. Coming from that angle, I mean, I will just be right up front with it from the very beginning. And, try to be fair with given the other side, but it's becoming increasingly more difficult when you hear the same
right.
talking points coming from various members. I mean, this is a concerted effort, the way I see it, from Boehner, from, Blaine Lueckemeyer, from other, from Mitch McConnell, from Mike Huckabee. You know, I mean, they're all kind of going after these Tea Party groups pretty hard because they, we are really just putting a kink in their armor
yep.
there. They're... Do you have, I mean, what's your take on that?
I think that right now, the one thing I'm trying to calibrate. Where are we from the the common bucket, if you will, the pale of conservatives, whether you are a Blaine Lueckemeyer or a John or a Lisa or a Randy, because at some sense that bucket is filled to some level of conservatism. And ideologically filled, and I think has a lot of principle that drives us, and others, I think, who have been trying to swim in the quagmire that is Washington, D.C., have not yet figured out the right way to approach those of us who want to hold them accountable for what we view rightfully as constitutional conservatism. And I think they think that they're trying to help us understand pragmatism, and we think that we've understood pragmatism so much that they've become just conservative progressives, if that makes sense. The good news about all this is, I think I'm glad we're having the discussion now rather than September or October, and I'm hoping that there's going to be a way to get this done. What I was disappointed about was that we have not. I'm not sure, and maybe you know because you're connected probably with the leadership of the Tea Party movement better than I. But I keep saying, I asked Blaine, I've asked others that have called and sort of angry about the Republican establishment work on the other side of the bar. Has anyone gotten the Tea Party, the people who Jim DeMint, John Boehner, the Freedom Works people, Americans for Prosperity, Tim Phillips at the national level, Patrick Warner locally. Have we gotten these people in the same room to try to fight our battles out behind closed doors before we do that in the public? Because the one thing I'm concerned about, and I told you this in our previous conversation, I've said it on the air, and frankly, I've taken some hits from my audience, and that's fine. I'm happy to hear where everyone's coming from. But I'm concerned that airing out our dirty laundry in an uneducated public with a media who loves to watch us duke it out and loves to make hay out of that misery, I'm afraid that there's going to be some downside to that. And I'd like to see these battles fought robustly, vigorously, take off the gloves, but take them off behind closed doors first. Now, Lisa, you can answer me this. Do you think that they've done that? Boehner tried. The Tea Party people tried. They couldn't come to to, you know, to a meeting of the minds. And now they've decided they're going to, in a Reagan way, go around the formalities and go to the people and make their case. Is that could that be what's happening? I don't really know.
That's what I think is going on, because all of these organizations like FreedomWorks and Heritage and, you know, especially in Club for Growth, I mean, they have a heavy-duty lobby. I mean, those people have contact with the Boehners and the Lukemeyers and the, you know, I mean, they're out there every single day. And I think what we have here, I think what this boils down to basically is the system works as it's been set up. The founders and the framers were geniuses. It's all about bringing personal accountability back to the people. And people inside the Beltway have lost touch with that reality. And the only way that we're going to get back to any kind of semblance of constitutional government where the people control the government is to put that power back with the people. And which kind of brings me to another point that you and I have discussed, and I wrote about it in both those articles. You know, the people are disengaged for the most part. There is a faction of us in the Tea Party grassroots movement who are screaming bloody murder, and we are making a difference. But as you so rightly noted, we're not a big enough faction yet. People, you know, there aren't enough people in our movement. I mean, we're hurting somebody, or else Boehner wouldn't be screaming. But we're not a big enough movement maybe to sway things the way they need to be swayed in November.
I think we're a big enough movement. I don't think our movement's had enough time. If you think about it, this movement started, what, in 2009, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about a movement. When was it on the steps of the Arch, you know, locally? 2009 or 10?
I think it's nine.
We're talking about a movement that is fledgling in terms of, we're talking about 5 years. And when you're trying to take a population who for the last 100 years has been taught through public education, wow, what a great, you know, segment right before mine tonight, to be talking about how everything has been written, revisionist history, you know, character rather than the real, you know, three R's and on and on. Teaching the kind of character that is not, I think, the Judeo-Christian type of character, where we tolerate everything and self-destructive behavior, and we understand it. Well, you bring that then, you know, full circle, and you're looking at a population who now has to, as they suffered the progressive consequences or the consequences of progressive rule, which they voted for over the years, including progressive light, moderate Republicans, and now a small, ardent, loyal, highly educated, successful, how do we want to describe ourselves, right? I mean, we'd like to think we're the kind of people that the founders would be proud of, and you've got this small minority, and we talked about the difference among the number of people that watch Fox News versus the sum of the mainstream nightly newscasts in terms of their prime time numbers.
Right. It's huge.
We're big enough, but our message hasn't had enough time to sink in and to affect enough people to where they'll say, hey, wait a minute. You know, we need to step back and listen to these people. And you know what? 2010, we were opportunists because people were suffering. The ravages of the recession still widely and deeply felt. Then, of course, because stimuluses always work for a little bit, because everyone, even if not in reality, rhetorically they work, people are waiting for the stimulus to work, waiting for the wonders of Obamacare to roll out, right? Well, now we're seeing that those chickens are coming home to roost, right? And so I think this is a perfect election cycle for us to remain principled, be highly ideological, be opportunistic when someone lays one of our friends off who maybe voted for Obama or has calls himself an independent, to be opportunistic and take that opportunity to say, wow, I feel so bad. Remember what we talked about in 2010 when you went to a rally, or maybe you couldn't go to a rally with me, but you were interested. Listen to what I have to say, because if more people would have voted the way we were hoping and would have changed a bigger, you know, changed the Senate over and on, you can weave a story that I think can win the. So it's not a matter of there's not enough of a or look at the representation of urban America, which is highly blue, Northeast America, in terms of just population and raw representatives per you know, geographic area, we are outnumbered. And so we have to educate the educable. This is a great cycle to do with Obamacare absolutely falling on its face. And I think what I'm concerned about and why I hear what Blaine is saying is that we have to watch our rhetoric. We have to not be vitriolic when we make our points. Frankly, some of the things that I read about me during that interview were in the form of...
We're kind of breaking up.
I know where that's coming from. I know where that's coming from, right? They're my friends. They're trying to have a cordial discussion. But we have to watch out that we continue to act as principled as we think. And if we do that, I think we'll win the day, Lisa. I really do.
Well, I mean, I'm hoping so. You know, I kind of have the philosophy, and it can kind of lead us into this next discussion. There's kind of a rhetoric going out there. Well, the establishment is complaining because the Tea Party they're saying the Tea Party is insisting on its a my way or a highway attitude,
mm-hmm,
and
the
Tea Party is kind of saying, well, you know, we kind of went along with you, you know, we made
right.
our voices heard in 2009, we got our people elected in 2010, we've tried to work with you, and the Tea Party's kind of been infiltrated with a lot of establishment folks. It's kind of been weakened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like we haven't tried to work with the establishment
yeah.
Republican Party to strengthen our numbers and get our job done. And then,
right.
speaking of vitriolic language, you know, Blaine Lukemeyer was a little vitriolic. On both
well, no,
of your
yeah no right no I agree and look I'm not I what I'm saying here what I'm getting down to is we are at risk, and by we I mean the large conservative tent, and I think we'd all have to admit that not everyone that we're going to need, and by we I mean we the true patriotic, you know, the true patriots, the fife and drum constitutional conservatives, call them the Tea
mm-hmm.
Partier plus all their buddies and friends that really may not be formally involved in the Tea Party, but are right there lockstep at the voting at the voting box and so forth. Here's the deal: we're going to need more than that to win the election. I think we all have to agree there, right? I mean, that
mm-hmm.
There's not enough representatives from enough Tea Party districts to outmuscle moderates and Democrats. Okay, so if we start with that premise, we're going to have to be willing to, if we want to have our voice heard and gradually convince them step by step, inch by inch, that in fact every little change we make in a Tea Party-esque way to every bill then gets momentum for the next time we want to grab a little more back to the people. So we have to decide on the Tea Party. How far are we willing to compromise, bend, whatever, to really get a serious voice and a seat at the table? And we need to demand that the conservative, the so-called self-proclaimed conservatives, but those who we would, you know, call the establishment, we have to demand that, hey, look, this is where we started. We have bent here and here and here. Now, where have you bent? Are
mm-hmm.
you continuing to demand that we see things your way? And if that's the way to go, I'm right there with you, Lisa. I hope those discussions are happening. You know, I don't know if that's really going on. I hope it is.
Kind of seems like, you know, and I don't want to be oppositional, but I guess I'm going to be. Well, last night, State of the Union.
Yeah.
Most appalling thing I think I've heard in a really long time. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, we've got a lot. And I listened to the GOP rebuttal, was not mm-hmm. impressed, left me pretty flat. You know, more talking points, more appeasement, more milk toast, pretty much nothing. You know,
that's
then
interesting, because
I
heard different. But go ahead. I'll, after you finish, I heard different from the rebuttal, but go ahead.
Okay. To me, it sounded just like the talking points. It's kind of like, yeah, pat you on the head, tell you what you want to hear. We're not going to do anything about it. We're going to continue. You know, I mean, people should have been screaming, and nobody's saying the dirty word impeachment. You know,
and
I understand the whole Senate thing. You got to have the people in the Senate to do it and everything. But even if we take the Senate in 14, if it was possible to do that, I'm not sure that you can get people to talk impeachment. And there's never been a time in history more ready to impeach a president than today. So,
well, how many times have you heard me challenge Blaine Lutkemeyer and ask him for an impeachment bill under my Christmas tree, right? And I didn't get it. His rebuttal was, what was his rebuttal? It was essentially, that's going to take our eye off the prize.
Yeah, we don't want to rock the boat for 16. We impeached Clinton, and it didn't help us. I challenged him in person at a meeting in my district. Same thing. And I'm telling you, it is even making establishment people, the old guard establishment people in the trenches, it's making their blood boil.
I get that totally. Yeah, but the other point he made was not just about 2016. It was, again, going off the I think empiric fact that even self-proclaimed Republicans in polls in the wake of the shutdown last fall, blamed Republicans, and which is absolutely factually wrong. And we lost an opportunity, at least, to do even more damage to Obamacare and bring more light to it as it was unfolding. And he told me he was concerned on one of the programs that, it was going to take our eye off the prize of the collapsing Obamacare for this election cycle, and we wouldn't make the congressional gains we've made. I absolutely hear what you're saying, and I am, at this point, again, because the opportunity is here, and the way Obamacare is turning out to be such a failure, the way people are feeling the recession has never ended, even though officially it has. All of the, we're just seeing it all come together in a climactic failure of progressivism here as 2014 starts. I actually think now is a great time to do the impeachment thing, realizing it may cause a little short-term hit in polls. But, again, going back to that educational component, I believe strongly the truth will always win. I believe American principles are there latent somewhere deep inside many of the, little baby boo-boo and Jersey Shore brains out there, because there is that American essence that's out there. It's been covered up by years of progressivism and dependency and a cultural decay. But now people are feeling it, and no longer can they blame this economy on Bush. No longer can they blame the IRS scandal and the abuse of reporters on Bush. That was Obama's watch. And so, yes, I'd like to see him impeached. And again, not because I really think he's going to be, certainly with a Democratic Senate, he wouldn't be convicted and put out of office. We can't believe that. But it's a great teachable moment. It's an opportunity. That would be the buzz at the water cooler. That's the time for the Lisas and the Randys and all the folks listening to say, you want to know why he was impeached? You thought Lewinsky was, bad because he told a lie and he's a schmuck, taking advantage of his power with an intern? Hey, we're talking about American principles and your liberty here. Let's have a cup of coffee. That's my point.
Dr. Tobler, this is Cindy. I'm sitting in with Lisa tonight. Lisa,
sure.
I want to throw this out there real quick. Let's take the State of the Union. You're talking about teachable moments, and I think you're right. I agree with you. But I think Tea Party people like myself are coming from, and to answer your question, those talks are taking place behind closed doors, mm-hmm. and it's not going well.
I think that's why they took the gloves off,
Right. And the thing is that let's go back to the teachable moments. I think where the frustration comes in, and I think this is what Lisa was alluding to in her response to last night's Republican response, the official Republican response to mm-hmm. the State of the Union address. Number one, we have copies of the president's remarks way in advance of them being given at the State of the Union address. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of us were left wanting and very disappointed that a very teachable moment for the American public, who primarily gets their news through the lamestream media, that the Republicans did not take the gloves off when they came out in the rebuttal and show this president up for what he is. Talk about, just lay out his failures with Obamacare and call him out on some of the bald-faced lies that he presented to the American people as truth last night. And it was very frustrating to not see the Republicans need to take the gloves off with the Democrats, because we're not going to win elections soft-toeing around with someone like Obama. It's not going to happen. And the American people, I think, really are getting more and more disenfranchised with him and disgusted.
Yes.
They really are. But they're looking for someone with the spine and the backbone to stand up. And more than that, they're just looking for someone to stand there and tell the truth when they know they've been lied to.
All right. Cindy, I think, I don't know, this is a hypothesis. I think the Republic.
You're breaking up, Dr. Tobler.
Yeah, I'm sorry here. Is this better?
Yes.
The leadership is woefully mistaken. Well, depending on where we're going to go with immigration, we have to see what they roll out. But would it be...
Oh, you're breaking up again.
People are tired of hearing us bash Obama, because guess what? The people are over Obama. They get it. And now it's our turn to talk positively and be forward-looking and take the veil off of our positive rainbow approach and stop being the bashers. And again, I'm talking not how Tea Partiers view us, the GOP, if you will, but how the little Snooki and the Jersey Shore watchers are looking at us. Because in many of their minds, I don't think we can deny, we're the stodgy, cynical, angry right who just everything Obama does, it's wrong, and we just hate Obama. Well, I think they're over that, and they actually, I think we've won that war. I mean, the latest poll said they don't trust him. Two-thirds of Americans don't trust him to make decisions for the country. Okay, so now it is time to do that. And then one thing I heard, again, at the beginning of what was a very fluffy message, but it's a 10-minute message, don't have a lot of time to do a lot of educating to people who are, again, remember the audience they're trying to reach. They're not trying to reach you and I. They're trying to reach those independents who have been disengaged, and now we finally have their ear. They're not going to be interested in Federalist Papers quite yet. They're not interested in 5,000-year leaps quite yet. Trust me. I've tried. I've tried day in, day out with people I work with and people I rub shoulders with every day. But they're beginning to listen to messages, like she said at the beginning of that, which I heard her, and it's paraphrased, she said, you know, we don't want to be in your way anymore. That's what I heard. It's, you know, we believe you can make better decisions for you. To me, that was a positive message. And in broad brushstroke terms, that's the first baby step to open the door to getting into the weeds with people who aren't used to being there.
Okay, let me throw this at you, Dr. Tobler. I think it's a valid point. You have to address that middle of the bell curve, I just want to be led demographic in a different way. However,
right.
let's go back in history just a little bit. When McCain was running for president against Obama in 2008, he was the GOP establishment pick. It was his turn. Nobody was thrilled about him. There were a lot of people marching along because he was better than Obama. When he picked Sarah Palin for his running mate, his numbers skyrocketed because people are just starving for some conservative leadership, and she represented that. Well, we all know how that ended up. Jump forward to during that campaign as well, during the primaries, when you had 13 different Republicans, every time a new Republican would put their hat into the ring, you know, people were looking, just starving for that good, strong conservative leadership, you know, just clawing for it, you know. When Fred Thompson came in, before we found out how squishy he was, everybody loved Fred Thompson, you know, and it was Santorum, and it was, I mean, all of these people. I think people are really looking for strong conservative leadership, even people in the middle of the bell curve, who are those squishy people that they're so worried about treading on too heavily. I mean, in a couple of months here, as Obamacare rolls out, and a lot of people are already feeling it, and I don't believe the jobs numbers that the government is putting out. I think more people are out of work and underemployed than what they're telling us. I think people are really feeling it now. And I think it's time for a little bit toothier message from the GOP. You know, people are loving Mike Lee and Ted Cruz and Rand Paul now. They're, you know, they're rock stars almost in the not only in the conservative movement, but I think they're gaining some traction out there in the mainstream media, because last week there was a huge article, I think, in New York Times just eviscerating Rand Paul. You know, I don't think they would be going after those guys if they weren't a threat.
But look, here's something I'll challenge you. I think sometimes we get frustrated. I get frustrated with it. I vacillate between scorched earth, as we were talking with a caller a week or so ago. You know, it's like scorched earth, you know, let's just shut government down for 3 years until they open it up. We can the house. We don't have to pass that bill and, you know, whatever. And, you know, take the hit and maybe it'll all come to asunder and people will realize that liberty is the right way. And then educate in the meantime. What I'm getting at is here, I get frustrated at how tough it is to legislate from a minority position.
Mm-hmm.
Even if Blaine Lutemeyer wanted to vote every Tea Party vote that everyone on this call and on my show and on our station and at every Tea Party rally, if he voted and decided and voted strictly according to their wishes, he's one vote. And if there were 75 or 76 other votes, I think that's roughly what the Tea Party coalition is in the House. Right now, until we get more, we'd win nothing, right? I mean, mm-hmm. we'd really win nothing, except we could shut down things. That's all
we're
can
not winning anything anyway.
No. I get that. But on the other hand, I mean, there's a risk to that. And I think if anyone doesn't acknowledge that, at least there's a risk. That, again, based on the media analysis and the effective media and remember what people are watching, there's a risk that it could really, really tear asunder chances to build more conservatism, albeit not perfect conservatism, but more conservatism in the Congress. But you know, you talk about people who are our, you know, people we admire. What has Rand Paul been espousing recently? He's talking about what amount to basically refurbished or refabricated enterprise zones, right? Taking money, mm-hmm. right? Well,
great.
Now, in its pure sense, we'd all go, oh, God, he's not a pure federal person. In fact, that's a lot of what Obama has copied in his program, you know? And my point is when you're sitting in the Senate or you're sitting in the Congress, not having been there in the legislature, I think you do have to do your best to be as conservative, as principled, to get something done and to finally make an impact in those precincts that we need to start listening to us, you know? And that's where I think we're going to get to in the immigration debate. I hope to God that we get to a point where at least a vast majority of Republicans, I would hope every Republican, is in no way, shape, or form going to ever be willing to give citizenship to adults who came into this country illegally. They have a different feeling about the kids of adults who did not make that choice on their own. I actually, you know, think we need to give them some accommodation and let their parents go, or they can go with their parents, but their parents must go. I think that's, you know, one approach. But I don't know if that makes any sense, but I'm troubled that even our pure, you know, libertarian type guys like Rand Paul, who I'd love to see him sitting in the White House. He has had to capitulate with sort of a federal program that has a little flavor to it of some involvement in the federal government where they shouldn't be. How do we feel about that? I don't know. Are we going to throw him out? Are we going to throw the baby out with the bathwater? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
I don't think it's a question of us throwing someone out, Dr. Tobler. I think what we have to be willing to do, we the citizens, we have a responsibility here. What I would like to see us doing is standing up and holding a Rand Paul accountable. You know, we need to give kudos when kudos are due, but we need to unabashedly stand up and say, no, that's not acceptable when they get it wrong, period.
Sure.
There is no discussion. There is no compromise. You messed this up. And if we can't have that discussion, we're never going to get anywhere. I mean, we've been playing it the other way for a long time.
Right.
And I've been in this fight for 30 years. And I see this. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result.
Yeah.
Reagan,
yeah.
You know, we all love to channel Reagan, and he was fantastic.
and he brought something fresh and needed to this country that we hadn't had in a long time. But if Reagan had really fundamentally changed the Republican Party and the bent that it had at the time that he took office, we wouldn't be where we are today. The fact of the matter is he didn't. He changed the American people for a good part of time, but we've slid back down the abyss ourselves. And I don't think, I would argue that the Republican Party just played the game when Reagan was in office until they could get someone a little more, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know.
And I don't know why I threw that out there. But
well, you said something interesting. And as I think about it, this is a great discussion because let's take, I always like to try to take these ideological debates and conundrums that we have and bring them down to practical questions and follow logically what could happen, sort of in a chess game kind of a way. Before you make a move, you find out, you think through the 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 different ways that the game could unfold over the next few moves. And by the way, I'm a pretty lousy chess player, but that's what I try to do. You said something to the effect of, you know, let them get away with what's wrong, or, you know, implying the converse of that, we know what's right. Here's a practical issue. Is any legislator who votes for any farm bill except that eliminates all agricultural subsidies and all food stamps not a true Republican, Tea Party, a patriot, whatever you want to call them? Is any legislator who doesn't vote to absolutely phase out Social Security on every vote that they have to take on that, even if, and privatize it within 5 years, are they not a true patriot? But if they vote, on the other hand, to say we're going to, reduce the cost of living increases in this or that, or what is right? Who has the rights to what's right? Who decides that? Who's the arbiter of that? We all know, for instance, that the federal education system and the Department of Education is absolutely not mentioned in the Constitution. It's not one of the federal government's powers, right? And we could name several others. So is a legislator who votes to diminish the federal government's control over education, but not to eliminate it in one fell swoop, in other words, it's all or nothing, bad legislator? I don't know. I mean, that's essentially the proposition that you make, because if right is the ultimate goal that we wish we'd have, you know, I wish we'd have never had a Department of Education. I wish we'd never had Social Security. It's not the government's business to be involved in that. On and on and on. How many do I have to list? But they're here. And even Tea Party Republicans want to see their Social Security check coming, believe it or not. I've talked to them. So you see what I mean. Whose goal? Is your definition of right, what's Tea Party right? Is my definition of right, Tea Party right? Is a shrunk-down Department of Education right, or is it only an elimination of the Department of Education right? Do you see what I'm getting at here?
Well, I mean, I would agree with you. I mean, we didn't get here overnight. We're not going to fix it overnight. But I don't see any movement at all in the establishment Republican Party now trying to even incrementally, and I have a problem with incremental politics to begin with, but
right.
I don't see any movement from the Republicans trying to incrementally shave away the bureaucracy. I don't see any of it.
Wait a minute. Let me make a point. This is really important. I hope everyone really listens carefully to this. I did a lot of research, and we actually brought it up with Dan Haller. There were votes on bills on the present farm bill that, of course, is a big controversy up there, to whack out big amounts of money from food stamps as part of the farm bill. Now, there were some other things that were left in there that, frankly, weren't to my liking. Okay? Now, the problem is Heritage Action recommended a no on that. Nancy Pelosi voted no because she's not going to vote for anything that cuts out any handouts or transfer payments, right? So this was an incremental step that, you know, was a good move, but yet Heritage Action wanted people to vote no, but if Blaine Lutkemeyer votes yes, then he's considered that wasn't a Heritage Action vote. But that was, it did take a big whack. I think it was $20 billion out of the food stamps.
And I'm not saying that maybe a better bill couldn't have been obtained, but it wasn't as though this wasn't a carve out in the direction we wanted it to go. And so if you imagine yourself wrestling with these votes yourself, it's easy to say, God, I didn't get all I wanted, but I got a pretty good amount, and we've started down the path. And, you know, we can proudly say that we have cut into the food stamp program, and we've limited farm subsidies for ethanol, you know, on whatever it is. And those bills were out there, but because they weren't pure enough, they weren't idealistic enough, they didn't cut enough, Heritage said no, so Pelosi gets a point for Heritage and Lukemeyer gets a negative point. But yet it was clearly not a friendly, it was a more conservative and liberal move, okay?
Yeah.
And you see, and that's what Blaine was talking about. I'm not defending him, but I can see what he's saying. I see his point. How pure do you have to be considered a loyal, patriotic legislator?
I think the other thing we have to look at.
Oh, he also very much misrepresented the reality of that statement, because I went back and look. I mean, you know, one vote is one vote, and I understand it doesn't go his way, and he gets slapped on the wrist by it, but he totally misrepresented that statement. Nancy Pelosi has a 16% rating with Heritage Action, and Blaine Lutkemeyer has a 63%.
Right.
And that's across the board, and his statement was for 12. Because I researched this because I read that pushback and I saw that comment. But yes, if you look at every vote taken that, you know, that Heritage goes on. But what he specifically told me,
he cherry picked some bills.
Was the key votes, the 10 or 11 top Heritage votes. Now, that may have been a subset that his people chose or that the Republican Party chose, but those were key votes. They were farm bill votes. They were important votes. And so, yeah, if you look at all of them, sure, Pelosi didn't vote for any of the 40 budget bills, so she's going to get a ding on that. But you wouldn't expect her to. But, you know, I would expect Blaine to vote for a bill, I would think, that's going to cut stuff out of the farm bill and is going to really do a nice job in beginning to trim back what is the largest welfare system in the country, and that's the USDA. You know, but again, I'm not defending Blaine here, but what I'm saying is, did Heritage in that instance potentially lose an opportunity if they had just said, yeah, this is not the perfect vote we wanted, it's a good vote? I don't know. And I'm a Heritage guy. I love Heritage. You know, I think they're great. Isn't it ironic that Heritage actually wanted mandates back in the early 90s and late 80s? They were for mandates, and now they're not.
Yeah.
Interesting turn of events.
And evolution, absolutely, with the times, for sure. Okay, so let me throw this at you just real quick, and we'll wrap up the discussion. But so how much time do we have? I mean, we have a president sitting in the White House who thinks he can executive order his way out of a constitution. So when you're talking about incremental politics and you're talking about whacking $20 billion out of one bill and giving them everything they want on something else and soft-soaping a response to a State of the Union address and – you know, I mean, Boehner, he's a pushover, pretty much, in the eyes of the Tea Party.
Well, he was a pushover in the government shutdown, and again,
you
could dismiss polls, but polls said that we took a hit, you know. But the Tea Party doesn't rule yet.
Right.
Tea Party principles should rule. They should rule. And maybe the best way for the Tea Party to quickly get rule is to absolutely put heels in the ground, shut the government down, maybe get voted out of office as a result. Maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe there is that silent middle majority that does want the Tea Party. They just don't tell pollsters, and they'll vote for them at some point, unknown. And this is my concern. I'm not being cynical here. This is just, I think you have to realize this is a potential path. You get. You know how it is in politics. The media and your opponent paints you. The non-engaged, low-information voters, both the Tea Partiers out, they now have no power. Progressivism rules the day. We collapse, and out of the ashes rises the Tea Party phoenix who say, we told you so, now do you want to follow us? That will happen. That is one possibility that can happen, and I believe it would happen, because truth and those values always win. What I'm unclear about is if there is a way to get it back. You've heard me say it more than once on my program. I think the teeter has tottered. I don't think there is a way back. Okay? And so maybe that's why, you know, I'm probably going to have my swan song with Lukemeyer and all the rest of them when I go ballistic on immigration. I'll be right alongside you there saying, where are you guys? What in the world are you thinking, you know? And Lukemeyer will never talk to me again, which is fine. But I think Blaine is a more conservative person than those statements and his votes have left him. I think that Boehner is a more conservative person. I think they know they have not only a legislature, but a country by the tail that is a absolute out-of-control, cultural, political, educationally challenged mass of people. You know, I just, at the hospital I'm chief medical officer at, we had some consultants review, actually there's a state, sort of a quasi-governmental board, review some our patient discharge instructions for a couple of things, just to make sure that, you know, they look good and so forth. By the way, there's like 10 or 11 well-paid full-time people looking over communications documents from hospitals. Isn't that interesting? And figure this out. The statement we got back is you need to consider writing this in 7th to 8th grade. I don't know the exact grade, but it was embarrassingly low language. Now, these people are not, I mean, you know what, they don't have an axe to grind. This is not a political organization. We're told in medical circles all the time, you have to speak to people as though they are in junior high. That's what the American population, not Tea Partiers, okay? I want to make that clear, not Tea Partiers. Mm-hmm. There's enough people out there that are so uninformed that I frankly don't know whether we can reel it back right now. But I think when you're sitting up there in Washington, D.C., and you're getting letters for every Tea Party letter, you get, you know, a request for unemployment benefits, and you get a request for food stamp expansion, and on and on and on, and you're thinking, my God, I just got to minimize the progressive damage, keep educating, thanking my Tea Party people, not criticizing them and calling them those folks, big mistake, Blaine, okay?
Yeah.
And hope that, and it, we need to be allies and mentors at the same time to our legislators, and we need to understand where they're coming from. You know, it's a lot tougher to sit in that seat, I think, than it is to run for it. I think we'd all admit that. And I'm glad you're out there holding their feet to the fire. I'm glad you're holding my feet to hold their feet to the fire. And I just hope we'll all understand that there's a bigger reality here, sadly, sadly. Look as you go through your workday, unless you work at a conservative think tank. Look at the sad, misinformed, tragically misdirected people. And those are the people that we need to somehow find a way to convince. And in the meantime, hold the fort and try not to slip anymore and even make a little advance. That's my hope. That's what I hope will happen.
Yeah, hopefully sooner than later. Dr.
I
Randy
hope so.
Tobler, thank you for being with me tonight. I really appreciate it. You can listen to Randy Tobler Saturday mornings, 6 to 10 a.m. on 97 FM Talk Radio in St. Louis, KFTK. And you can also stream it. I have TuneIn Radio. I stream it on my TuneIn on my devices. Thank you,
Great being
Dr.
with you.
Tobler.
Thanks so much. Sorry for the technical problems, but I appreciate you asking me to be on.
No problem. I hope you'll come on again soon.
I will. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back to wrap it up. No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic. So you
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve, because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
Well, it is kind of all over. We're almost at the end. We just have a couple minutes left. What do you think, Cindy?
I think it was a great show tonight. A lot of good things were discussed, and I think that that's very important. And, you know, I think Dr. Tobler was very insightful. I didn't agree with everything that he said, but I really appreciate his, you know, I think we can all appreciate that we're all trying to find our way in this, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, hopefully it'll all work itself out. Hopefully sooner than later. I'm kind of the opinion that we have to really, the only way that it is going to work itself out is for people to feel pain. I think the people are feeling the pain. I don't think the Congress is feeling the pain. I think they need to feel the pain, and I think that'll straighten them up real quick.
And that's something, too, I think a lot of people out here in the world where we live and try to survive every day, a lot of people are hurting. You and I are seeing them every day. And I think that they're wanting real answers. They're not wanting a mamby-pamby response to a State of the Union address that was absolutely, no doubt, just bull. They want people to get up there and say, okay, this has been done wrong. This is the cost. And this is what we have been proposing that could fix it. And turn the table. You know, the president threw down the gauntlet. He said, you know, you're not putting anything out there. You guys haven't put anything out there. Show us your numbers. Well, we have. Nobody's talking about it. And last night, with all of lamestream media streaming these responses and stuff, we had a chance to lay that out there, and we didn't. Why?
Mm-mm. Yep. Well, the discussion
That's
carries on for another.
To.
Yep. Mm-hmm. We'll carry on the discussion another day. We have a great show already lined up for next week. There's some radioactive waste that has been causing some issues here in the St. Louis area. We've had the folks on from Westlake Landfill before. There's been some new developments in that situation. We're going to have those folks on again next week to talk about what's going on with all that radioactive waste and how it's being dealt with or not by the politicians in the area. And Joe Wolverton of The New American wrote a great piece about Article 5 and why we don't need it. I'm telling you, folks, I'm getting hammered by all of these people who have just gone ape crazy over Levin's book about why we need Article 5 Constitutional Convention. I don't think that we do. We're going to have Joe Wolverton on next week to talk about that. And until next week, folks, thank you, Cindy McGee, for sitting in with me again. Thanks to Dr. Randy Tobler and Robin Eubanks. We will be here again next week, 7 p.m., Wednesday evening. Look for me, Culture Vigilante, on Facebook and Twitter. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, sign up, and find all of our radio podcasts there. Also, culturevigilante.wordpress.org. We'll talk to you again next week.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.